The title of this is Escaping the Tribulation. And I wondered, what am I going to give? Should I prepare a totally different message in case nobody comes? And I decided, you know, even yesterday I was still working on it, didn't have an idea. And we got the prayer request that I sent out, the compilation. I think you know I don't put that compilation together. John Labissonnière, Knoxville congregation elder over there, he puts that together and sends it to me every week. I appreciate that. And I will send the urgent ones sooner in the week if it's something that's really urgent. But it was a difficult update. Of the four people mentioned on there, three had died. So it was just telling us that three of them had died. And of course, Emily Bishop, little girl, died. I don't feel sorry for Emily. I feel desperately sorry for her family. Mom, dad, younger children. Very much so. But then there was the one who didn't die, but it's in your bulletin. But I'm going to read it again anyway. It's in the bulletin for Dick Baxter sent a prayer request for his wife, Louise. Louise is the one who had a brain tumors, and they removed the largest one. And it says this: Dick and Louise Baxter have been overwhelmed by the words of comfort and support from around the world and cannot express their thanks proportionately. The many prayers have given them strength even at this difficult time. The oncologist has confirmed that the cancer in her brain has spread along with fluid buildup. They have no options to continue treatment at this time. If the swelling diminishes, then they may be able to resume some form of treatment. Dick said that he is now having more difficulties communicating with her, and she is becoming increasingly frustrated with her diminished capacity. They have children that have come to spend as much time as they are able with them, and they continue to desire prayers on their behalf. Dick ended his last note to me by saying, "We have been listening to good sermons and are really glad for the understanding of God's plan and His priceless grace. I know He will do what is best, and have been looking at Isaiah 57, verses 1 and 2. Now I'd like to turn or read Isaiah 57, verses 1 and 2. Isaiah 57, beginning in verse 1. And we'll read this in the New King James to begin with. It says, "The righteous perishes." Not just the evil, not just sinners. The righteous perishes. "And no man takes it to heart." You see all of these church members dying. And what do you think? Well, God's not healing. No man takes it to heart. "Merciful men are taken away, while no one considers that the righteous is taken away from evil. Now, the King James and the American Standard Version and several others have the evil to come. They assume that's what it means. So they have added the words to come. The King James has it, the evil to come. The complete Jewish Bible has, no one understands that the righteous person is taken away from the evil yet to come. That they are delivered from the evil yet to come. The English Standard Version and the International Standard Version have. Is that rain? The righteous man perishes and no one lays it to heart. Devout men are taken away while no one understands. For the righteous man is taken away from calamity. From calamity. And then I will read verse 2. He shall enter into peace. Now this is poetic. This is going to be poetic here. They shall rest in their beds. That's talking about the grave. It's like resting in a bed. Each one walking in his uprightness. And you'd say, are they really walking? They aren't. That's poetic. That each one has their righteous deeds remembered. That God remembers them as they lived and the way they lived. And they're at rest, and God has taken them away. And we know that there's going to come a time of great evil, great troubles, great pains, great sorrow, great sadness. And I want to read three of those places in the Bible that talk about what we call, and what the Bible calls, great tribulation. And there are three places at least, Daniel 12, verses 1 through 3. Daniel 12, verses 1 through 3. Daniel 12, and the very last verse, is the one that I have been reading at so many funerals, especially if it's a senior citizen, where it says, you'll enter into rest. You'll rest, Daniel, and you'll stand in your place at the end of time. But he's at peace. God looks on Daniel and the righteous who die as at rest. But I want to start this chapter, Daniel 12. Now, actually, this is not the beginning of the prophecy. The beginning of the prophecy actually begins in chapter 10. 10, 11, and 12 are all one long prophecy. Very long. But he breaks into a different thought right here in this long prophecy in verse 1. Daniel 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble. Now, everyone who has died is delivered from that time of trouble. Such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book. So when is it talking about? It's talking about the very end time, just before the resurrection, that there's going to be a great tribulation. And it's at that time there's going to be also a resurrection after this tribulation. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. Now, I want to go back and look at this where it says, there will be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. You know, that's quite a thought, isn't it? Think of all of the troubles that have been on this earth. Think of all the troubles that Israel has had. Think of the captivities they have had. The slavery that they have had. The slavery they had in Egypt, where all the little boys were thrown in the Nile. Turn to Ezekiel chapter 5, verses 7 through 10. Ezekiel 5, verse 7 through 10. He says, Ezekiel 5 and verse 7. I try to pause here a moment. I'm cheating again with having this all printed out. I don't have it all, but I have most of it. The scriptures printed out for me. Ezekiel 5 and verse 7. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, because you have multiplied disobedience more than the nations that are all around you, have not walked in my statutes, nor kept my judgments, nor even done according to the judgments of the nations that are all around you. Were it worse than many Gentile nations? Speaking of Israel. Verse 8. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, indeed, I am against you and will execute judgments in your midst in the sight of the nations. By the way, it's interesting that religious organizations in Africa are condemning America and have even suggested that they need to send missionaries the other way. I speak absolutely not an exaggeration. There are Episcopal churches in the United States that have aligned themselves with the Episcopal Church in Nigeria, because the bishop of the Episcopal Church in Nigeria and the church in Nigeria, the Episcopal Church, absolutely condemns what the Episcopal Church is doing. Now, the Episcopal Church is also known as the Anglican Church. It's the Church of England is the Episcopal Church. And it's the same group. And what have they done? They have ordained openly gay bishops to lead. Well, there are some Episcopal churches in the United States who are totally against that because they have accepted gay marriage in that church. And openly gay practicing. And the Bible condemns that. And they condemn that in Africa. It's still illegal in Uganda with the threat of death. It's the death penalty for homosexual acts. And they are looking at the United States, which is now having not only allowing it, but churches are promoting that this is okay. You haven't even done according to the judgments of the nations that are around you. Notice, you haven't walked in my statutes nor kept my judgments. Are they done away? This is talking about the end time. It's talking about the end time. And God's statutes and judgments are not done away. Verse 8, therefore, thus says the Lord God, indeed, I am against you and will execute judgments in your midst in the sight of the nations. And, you know, France has just approved gay marriage. Although there are people, the Catholic Church is against it, and there are Catholics who have been marching in protest in France. But it passed, and they've already begun having marriages, and they've seen it. Well, France is part of Israel. And anyway, he says, I will do among you what I have never done. Notice that, verse 9. I will do among you what I have never done, and the like of which I will never do again because of all your abominations. See, this is the same exact time that was mentioned in Daniel 12. Worse than has ever been And it will never do it again. You can only have one time that is worse than has ever been and worse than ever will be. And if you stop and think of all the things that God has allowed on this earth, the Black Death, where what was it, something like 1/3 of all the people died in those areas where it hit, Europe, and the wars that they have had and the earthquakes that have occurred, and this is World War II. It's estimated that 50 million people died in that war. And most of them were not soldiers. Of that, the estimate is that 24 of that 50 million died in the Soviet Union. When the Germans came in and just slaughtered. It's no wonder that the Soviet Union was paranoid. Was just paranoid. For a long while. Of which I will never do again. You know, Patton was for arming the Germans and letting them march back into Russia, into the Soviet Union. And there have been others who've said, you know, what we ought to do is just, when we were having the Cold War, they said, instead of us having nuclear weapons and we're in control of them, tell the Soviet Union we're going to have peace or we're just going to give the nuclear weapons to the Germans and reestablish the German high command. And, you know, the Russians would have been, you know, dry mouthed over that. But God said, I mean, I'm talking about how bad things have been at times. How very bad things have been. The things that happened in China when the Japanese invaded. I mean, it was horrible. And the things they did in the Philippines. I lived in the Philippines after the war. I was there in about 48, 47, 48, or maybe it's 48, 49. But I was in third grade there. I remember it well. My dad taking me to a castle that had been a Spanish castle. And they had it was right near the ocean. And it was on a bay that had the tides. And they had a place in the dungeon that was just above the water level. And they had a spot, and they took me to it. And you could see where they would take prisoners and chain them in at low tide, and then the tide would just come in and drown them. And my dad wasn't so bitter against the Japanese when we, I don't know, we even went to Japan. And he bought things that were Japanese. But in later years, he became bitter against the Japanese because of all the things that they had done to our troops, much less to the Chinese and the Filipinos and others, the Koreans, who are still bitter. And you'd say, could things get worse than that? My dad wouldn't buy anything Japanese in his last, 10, maybe 15, 20 years. He would not get many electronic goods because they were made in Japan. I think I've told this story before. I bought a Toyota Camry. And I don't know why. I went down to see my dad by myself. And he said, I've got some stuff in the barn for you. So he said, pull your car down. So I pulled the car down. It was a Toyota Camry. And I was hoping he wouldn't notice. But he put some stuff in the trunk, and then he said, I'll ride back to the house with you. And he got in, and he said, what kind of a car is this? And I said, it's a Camry. I didn't say Toyota. And he said, that's a Japanese car, isn't it? And I said, yes, sir. Well, perhaps you've forgotten what they did to our troops that they captured. And I didn't say a thing, came home and sold the car. And I thought, I'll not get another Japanese car as long as my dad's alive. I'll honor my father. I disagreed with him. But I just am bringing out, how can things get worse and be worse than has ever been to any nation? How bad can it get? How about 2/3 killed off? 1/3 by the sword, 1/3 by the pestilence, and then 1/3 go into captivity, and the sword go after them. And it's, I gave a sermon once on how few will finally make it back. And even after they come out of captivity, he says, I'm going to take you into the wilderness. I'm going to remove all the rebels. I mean, you're going to think, well, I'm out of captivity. I'm headed toward Jerusalem. No, you're not. I'm going to take you into the wilderness and remove all the rebels. He says, I'm going to make you pass under the rod. And it says, men will be few. They'll be like fine gold. There'll be so few. Now, that's a tribulation and a day of the Lord. I'll tell you what. People who are asleep at peace. And he says, I'll do among you what I have never done, and the like of which I will never do again because of all your abominations. So he obviously feels, Lucretia almost drowned once. And she said at first she was fighting, and then all of a sudden she felt peace. And she thought, well, this is easy. This isn't that bad. And then I guess somebody grabbed her or whatever happened. But anyway, she got out. And she has mentioned that those little children that drowned over in Oklahoma City, remember that just last week? They were down in a low spot where they were to be protected, and yet water came in and they were sealed in, and they, I guess in the school, they drowned. And Lucretia's comment, well, that's an easy way to go. I mean, because she almost drowned, and she said it wasn't all that bad. But, you know, apparently what's going to happen here is worse than drowning. Because a lot of people drown. If you're just looking at the total number of people who die, percentage-wise, Noah's flood, you'd say that's the worst that you could ever be. Now he says, I'm going to do something worse than that. Verse 10. Therefore fathers shall eat their sons in your midst. Isn't that worse than drowning? And sons shall eat their fathers. Starving to death. A little worse than drowning. And I will execute judgments among you. And all of you who remain, I will scatter to all the winds. I want to go to Matthew chapter 24 and read verse 21 and 22. Matthew 24, verse 21 and 22. And we know these verses well. Very well. But I'll read verse 21 that you know. For then there will be great tribulation. This is the not just tribulation, great tribulation. Great tribulation that Gerald Steyer will not have to face. That's a blessing. He's asleep at peace. It's his family for whom we pray. They're the ones. Such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. Carolyn Williams won't have to face that. Ray Breedlove's stepmom will not have to face that. But it's going to be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. How bad is it going to be? Verse 22. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. Now, it's not talking about spiritual salvation. It's talking about flesh being saved. No flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. And I want to just read that in the Good News Bible, out of the Good News Bible, and the way they have worded it. But God has already reduced the number of days. Had He not done so, nobody would survive. How bad will it be? Nobody would survive if He did not stop what was going on. When they gather at Armageddon, they would destroy the world. But Jesus Christ will return at that time. And there'll still be death and destruction, but it will not be in the entire world. That it apparently would have been had God not sent Jesus Christ at that moment. Nobody would survive, but for the sake of His chosen people, however, God will reduce the days. I want to go back in Matthew 24 and just read some of the things that are going to lead up to that time. And we'll go back to and read verses 3 through 9. Verse 3. Now, as He sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to Him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of Your coming and of the end of the age?" And my margin, or just above, actually, this, it says the disciples' two questions. And that's what's interesting, because the disciples, I'm convinced, didn't realize they were asking two questions. I think they thought they were asking the same thing in more than one way. And they said, "Tell us, when will these things be?" Well, that's talking about one stone left upon another will not be thrown down. You know, that happened in 70 A.D. And they assumed that that would be at the same time as the return of the Messiah. When will these things be? And that is the stones coming down. And what will be the sign of Your coming and of the end of the age, the end of the age of man? Now, those are two questions that are actually the same question. What will be the sign of Your coming at the end of the age? The end of the age of man, the end of the age of Satan, and the beginning of the age of the kingdom of God, which we are here discussing, the kingdom of God, and entering into it. But we're talking about, how can we get there? How can we survive? Well, then going on, verse 4. And Jesus answered and said to them, "Take heed that no one deceives you." Now, I've written in my margin right beside that, where it says that first seal. First seal. Because there are seven seals on the scroll in the book of Revelation. And this is the first seal. "For many will come in My name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." Now, I always thought that meant that people would come saying, "Look at Me, I'm the Messiah. I'm the Anointed One. I'm the Christ." But it doesn't necessarily mean that. Because it's Jesus speaking here, and He says, "Many will come saying, 'I, Jesus, am the Christ.'" And there are people who come and say that Jesus is the Anointed One. They preach Jesus, the Messiah, the Anointed One, the Christ, and they have deceived many. I mean, the Catholic Church teaches that Jesus is the Christ. And Jesus said people would come saying that he was the Christ. Not necessarily that they were the Christ. Now, I'm sure there are some people who have come who claim that they're the Messiah. But it doesn't necessarily mean that. It could mean that they just say Jesus is the Messiah and deceive many. Verse 6, and you will hear of wars. And I've underlined wars and I have in the margin. Second seal. That's the second seal of Revelation. And rumors of wars. See that you're not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. You know, when we see wars, and they saw World War II, World War I, actually, people were saying this must be the end. World War II, Mr. Herbert Armstrong thought this must be the end. It says you'll see a lot of wars, but the end isn't yet. He later realized he was wrong. Hey, I've been wrong, you've been wrong. Even Paul made a statement where he was wrong. And it's when he showed up in Acts 20 and he called the Ephesians elders, and the prophecy had been that he would be taken captive by the Romans. And he assumed this can be the end, that they'll never see me in Ephesus again. And it said they wept, mostly because of what he said, that they would see his face no more. What he didn't know was that he would only be about 2 years in Rome there, and then they would set him free. And he was set free. And later, he went to Ephesus and wrote a letter from Ephesus. So he made it back to Ephesus. He misunderstood the prophecy. He didn't lie. He misunderstood. Haven't we all done that? The Bible, the dictionary says a lie is where you deliberately tell a falsehood to deceive. And he didn't deliberately tell a falsehood to deceive. They also said we're at the end time. And they were wrong. They were wrong. Mr. Armstrong was wrong. Let me tell you. And I know, since I think it's 27 years now that I have been in the Nashville area. And some of you have heard me speak sermon after sermon after sermon after sermon. And you have seen me on occasion be wrong. Maybe many occasions, right? I doubt anybody's been keeping record, and I'm glad you haven't. But you've been wrong. See, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines. Now, I've written three beside famine. Third seal. Pestilences. Four. Fourth seal. And earthquakes in various places. By the way, it does mention that there will be an earthquake back in the book of Revelation, but it's not listed as one of the seals. But it mentions it right in that same chapter. All these are the beginning of sorrows. That's the beginning. That's the beginning of sorrows. Not the end of it. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. That's the fifth seal. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. That's interesting. I don't know why necessarily they would. Maybe because of things that God will have us say. But I know that they're going to hate at least two of us. Not anybody in this room that I know of, but at least the two witnesses. It says that all the nations will hate them. And they're part of us. I don't know who they are, or even if they're alive, or maybe they are alive. Maybe God hasn't even called them yet. Garner Ted used to think they'd be two young Jewish men who God would convert. But speculation. A lot of people, as one man said, everybody I've ever heard, I think it was Darris McNeely, either he or Steve Myers at the Bible Wednesday night Bible study, you can watch over the internet every other Wednesday. And one of them said, everyone I've ever heard speculated as being the two witnesses, they're all dead. They're all dead. So, you'll be hated by all nations for my name's sake. I want to just skip on down to verse 29 through 31. Verse 29. After the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And I have written in my margin right here, sixth seal. There's the sixth seal. Verse 30. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. But you know, they're mourning. But if He hadn't come, humanity would have extinguished itself. Would have finally just blown this earth and filled it with toxic waste. Maybe bacteria or chemicals or atomic weapons and a nuclear winter that would have destroyed life. Who knows? But no flesh would have been saved. But they're going to mourn. Here's the one coming to save us. And they'll all be sad. They're not going to want to be involved with Him. In verse 31, this is going to end up being part of the seventh seal, is the return of Jesus Christ. It says, when they see Him, they see the Son of Man coming in clouds of heaven. That's part of the seventh seal. And the seventh seal will have seven trumps. And the seventh trump, He doesn't mention the other six, but He has verse 31, he mentions what's going to happen at the seventh trump. He will send His angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together His elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other, part of the seventh seal, and specifically the seventh trump that is going to blow. And then there will be seven plagues, bowl plagues. Well, I'll tell you what. In verse 31, it tells the escape. All of those people who have died, who've been spared, who are at rest, will be gathered together. Their rest will be over in one sense, but they'll always be at rest the rest of eternity. Because it will be, they'll never be tired. They'll never get exhausted. They will have limitless energy forever and ever. And the psalm says there is joy at God's right hand forevermore. So work will be no different from rest. Be very easy. God never tires. I want to turn back to Luke 21. Luke 21 and read verses 20 through 28. This is the same Olivet prophecy, but Luke, the remembrance that God gave him or told him, he wasn't actually there, but he was told this by others, and he wrote it carefully. Luke was a Greek physician, not a Jewish apostle, and he traveled with Paul. And he said he was careful to find out from those who were there to put it in order. And God inspired him to write certain things. And so here in Luke 21, verse 20, but when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. And that's a sign. That will be How do you know when it's time for to flee? When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies. And, you know, that could happen just any time. But I really wait. The one thing that will take a little time, and it's going to happen so suddenly that it's going to surprise people, but even then, sudden is a relative term, and that is for the beast to rise back up, the Roman Empire. And that may take just, I don't know, a few years for that to happen. That the Roman Empire has, but I mean, I don't know. I haven't been to heaven recently and haven't been a fly on the wall in God's throne room listening to discussions. So I don't know. And it may, you know, as to what and when that will be. Jesus said he didn't know. And he may know now, but he may still not know. God, he said, that's in the Father's hands. But in Mark, same one, he says, not even the Son knows. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. Now that's going to be the clue. That's going to be when the abomination that maketh desolate will occur. And so there could be a statue, but it's the armies that make the desolation. Verse 21. He says, then let those in Judea flee to the mountains. Let those who are in the midst of her depart, and let not those who are in the country enter her. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. That's going to show the signs of the end time. And we wonder about that. We have speculated for years that this revived Roman Empire will come in to bring peace to Jerusalem. Or as the Roman Empire used to call it, Pax Romana, the peace of Rome. Rome did bring a sort of peace. They got rid of the pirates in the Mediterranean. They had roads and they patrolled the roadways to try to stop robberies. Couldn't stop it completely. We don't have them stop robbery in America. But they were doing a pretty good job. They stopped little nations from fighting each other because they controlled everybody. And they didn't want unrest. So there was sort of a peace of Rome, Pax Romana. But there are going to be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And it may be that Rome will come in there, or the Roman Empire, whatever name it would go by at that time, will come in there, and it may go by Roman Empire. And they will say, we are here to protect Jerusalem from this warfare. We're here to protect Jerusalem from the King of the South. The King of the South in Daniel 11 was in Egypt. Was in Egypt. And we're here to protect. Now, the people in the South at that time who ruled Egypt were actually Greeks, the Ptolemies, that when Alexander the Great conquered a huge part of the world, one of the areas he conquered was Egypt. And he put a general, Ptolemy, down there. Well, when Alexander died, Ptolemy was one of the four generals that took over Alexander's empire, and the king of the south and his descendants were all Ptolemies. Ptolemy the first, Ptolemy the second, Ptolemy the third, Ptolemy the fourth. And they had a lot of daughters that they named Cleopatra, not just the one that we all know of. They had many daughters. Cleopatra means famous father. So you see, I name my daughter famous father. Who am I honoring? The daughter? Well, yeah, my daughter is being honored because she's got a really famous father. Me. So it wasn't unusual. And you know, I've often thought, well, it talks about the Egyptians to the south. And I thought, well, the Arabs are there. And not the original Egyptians. And I don't know why it never clicked with me. But if you remember, Abraham had a son by the handmaid, Ishmael, right? Hagar was what nationality? Egyptian. So now Ishmael was half Egyptian. But then Hagar got a wife for Ishmael. And it says where he got her, where she got her. Anybody happen to remember? Egypt. So now all of Ishmael's children were 3/4 Egyptian. So is it possible that even some of them married into, I mean, their grandmother, their mother was Egyptian. Many of them married into Egyptians. It's possible, but they're already 3/4 that descendants of Ishmael, and the Arabs claim to be descendants from Ishmael. Now, they're also descendants of Abraham's children through Keturah, too, who were sent to the east, which is in Arabia, sort of southeast, but that's what they called east. So anyway, at least Ishmael's descendants are Egyptians, more Egyptian than of Abraham, Abraham's blood. I thought that. So anyway, they are apparently Egyptian. And they're the king of the south. But can you see with Jerusalem? I mean, if Jerusalem is facing possible destruction from an Arab coalition, especially from the south, you know, the largest army of the Arabs is in Egypt. And the best equipped as far as a large army. Now, the Saudi Arabians are well equipped also, because they had the money. But the United States has been giving military support to Egypt for free for years and years and years, buying their friendship and saying, don't attack, and we'll give you some more. So they can be pretty strong army down there. And you could see them going in there, into Jerusalem to protect it from the Arabs to the south, who want to take control of it themselves. For these are the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. And then, verse 23, but woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, for there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. Now, I don't know if he's necessarily referring to church members there. Because, as Dr. Hayes said, the Israelites got out of Egypt and they took their babies. And they had pregnant women. So, they got out. Maybe that's referring not to those who are going to a place of safety, who may be pregnant and will take their babies. Maybe talking to others. In those days. For there will be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people. Well, maybe God's people are already in a nice place to be spared. And they will fall by the edge of the sword and be led away captive into all nations. And Jerusalem will be trampled by Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles are fulfilled. And there will be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars, and on the earth, distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them from fear, having a heart attack, and the expectation of those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven will be shaken. And I'm thinking that's mainly referring to throwing Satan out of heaven. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now, when these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your heads because your redemption draws near. So he says, when you begin to see it, That is, when we see Jerusalem surrounded with armies, we should be rejoicing that the end time is here. And not be afraid. Because even if we die in the tribulation, we will be in the resurrection. Even if we lose our heads, what does it say? That we'll be in the first resurrection. These are those who are beheaded, and it says, did not receive the mark of the beast on their forehead or in their hands. And they're going to live and reign with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years. Wow. Lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. And there's the promise that we look to. Look at verse 34 through 36 now. Verse 34 through 36. In verse 34, I'm looking for another translation for it here. And the contemporary version that you have. Take heed to yourselves. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. You know, I prepared this sermon thinking, well, maybe I was going to prepare a sermon and thought, well, if nobody shows up that's new, that I'll have a different sermon for the members. And I thought, no, I'm going to give this sermon right here. Because, you know, all of us in this room have cares in this life. All of us have cares in this life. I was thinking about, I was talking with Lucretia, and I was saying, you know, we've had nearly 50 years of marriage, and I said, we've had our difficulties. But the greatest difficulty that we ever faced, I said, you know what I consider the greatest difficulty we've ever faced? Sick children. Sick children. I just can't think of anything that has caused us more consternation and worry is when our children were sick. And every parent knows, you know, your kids can drive you nuts. They're running around, they're fighting, they're like wild Indians, they're noisy, they're making mess. And then they're lying down and they're sick and they don't want to move and they've been throwing up and they just have, they're listless and they have a terrible fever. And you want them up and making noise and running around and making mess. Because having a sick child is just about every parent's heartache. And if it's a real desperate sickness, just a nightmare. You want to give your own life. And so there are a lot of cares of this life, aren't there? A lot of cares in this life. But that day come upon you unexpectedly. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. You think you'd see it. And then it says, watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. And really, this is the capstone of the message that I wanted to give today. To whether it was new people or whether it's old folks who've been in the church for 50 or more years. And some may be even longer than, I don't know, has anybody been in church 60 years? Longer than me, if you have. So, I was baptized in 1960, although I began attending the year before. It's still easy to get involved in the cares of this life. and not spend time with God. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Now, I hadn't thought of it. We used to say often, you need to watch, be watching world news. And finally, when I studied Greek, I realized that's not what the Greek is saying at all. And it says, and then someone came to me in Little Rock, and he said, well, I try to pray every day that God will spare me from the tribulation. And I thought, that's not what it's talking about praying about. You don't just say, spare me, spare me, spare me, spare me, spare me every day. It's and there are some other translations that capture this better. And it's interesting, it begins, the contemporary English version has, watch out. Doesn't mean just watch world news, but watch out. The word is a military term. And it meant a watch, and that's why it is correct to translate it as watch. You know that you had the first watch, the second watch, the third watch? And I've said this before, but actually the word me comes from a Greek word that means to stay awake. Because the Greeks called the military times in the night where they stood watch. They didn't call it watch. They called it a stay awake. So not only does a soldier have to watch, but he has to stay awake. So there was the first stay awake, the second stay awake, and the third stay awake in the night. And some militaries had four of them, divided the night into four. Four watches, but they called it four stay awakes. And so it really means stay awake, therefore. And the contemporary English version has watch out. But the complete Jewish Bible has this. Stay alert. Always praying for what? That you will have the strength to escape all the things that will happen and to stand in the presence of the Son of Man. We're praying for ourselves to have the strength to stay faithful and to be obedient. The English Standard Version has, but stay awake at all times, praying that you may have strength to escape all these things that are going to take place and to stand before the Son of Man.